You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are here to talk all about the man, the myth, the legend, Len Wein himself. That's right. He's a comic book writer. He's a comic book editor. He writes TV. He writes movies. He's been on TV and he's been in movies. It's just amazing. And Len sadly passed away a few months ago. And we are now finding it in our hearts and time to be able to chat about it. And we've got a great show for you to talk about. And of course, you know, speaking of talking about, who else can I say when I want to talk? Mr. Mike Gordon's here.
Howdy.
How are you, my friend?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, we would have gotten around to honoring Len anyway, because, you know, we take every few months we do a spotlight on a comic legend, and it was only a matter of time. And it's just unfortunate that his time came in real life, so that it just sped it up a little bit because he was on our minds. So it was nice to do this. You know, we're getting sort of the tail end of 2017, and you know, I think after the year that we had last year, you know, everybody was like, well, that was pretty rough as far as, you know, losing so many influential people. But you know, the latter half of 2017 is proving to be, quite formidable as well. So, you know, we will continue that. Most of them, have work, amazing work that will live on. And it's nice to be able to bring that to people's attention if they are not familiar with them. Because as much as I you know, Len Wein was a figure that a name that I recognize so much. I mean, I don't even think about it. You know, Len Wein, that's like, of course I know who that is. It was amazing to me after his passing that not a lot of people did know who he was. And in fact, I've already seen many celebrity death lists, et cetera, you know, influential people or people that we've lost of, you know, of this year that have not mentioned Len Wein. And I'm like, how can you not mention him? The guy created Wolverine. That alone should get him some mention.
Oh, exactly. And it's just amazing, you know, the work, but we're going to talk all about it in a little bit. And we, of course, want to hear from you guys. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. I can't go any further for both Mike and I and everyone here on the ESO Network. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the folks in Las Vegas. What we woke up to this morning, what you guys went through last night, is pure hell. No one should have to go through that. At a concert of all things, the largest, you know, mass murder in recent history. And, you know, right now, as of this recording, 58 people have passed away and over 500 people have been injured. That's just staggering to me. And it's heartbreaking. And, you know, I couldn't do the show without mentioning it, you know. It's just heartbreaking to even think about, you know, the horror and what these people must have gone through at the concert. You know, they're at a festival, you know, and it just blows my mind. And to have someone so warped and evil to be able to do this to other people, it's just, and not even, you know, bat an eye about it, and, you know, shooting from a high rise and, you know, shooting down into a crowd. It's just like, you know, without any remorse, I can't even think about that. And, you know, the outpour of sympathy and, you know, thank you to the wonderful first responders who, you know, were there to help the people, because the numbers could have been much, much worse, especially in a crowd that size. It's just, it's heartbreaking to think about. And if, you know, anyone has a list who's a listener, has family who got injured or God forbid killed, you know, our thoughts and prayers are out with you. And, you know, we hope from both Mike, myself, our families, and everyone here in the ESO family, our thoughts are with you guys. So, you know, hopefully we'll never have to see something like this again, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just, and like you said, when we woke up this morning, I had no idea that the tragedy that was going on. It's one thing, you know, we've been talking about a lot of nature-created tragedies, earthquakes and hurricanes and tornadoes over the last month or so, and all the people affected by that. This is man-made, and it makes it even more horrible and more unforgivable. Yeah, very emotional time. And my hearts are with everybody who was affected, as well as true credit goes to those responders who helped save lives and are still working through the injuries of a lot of those people. So, yeah, it's a really bad time to, yeah. What else can you say?
Well, exactly. And that's, you know, we can't say anything else, and let's just leave it there. And, you know, here's to better things coming up for the rest of 2017 into 2018.
You're already wishing for next year. You're like, I want to get to next year already. The way this is going, I don't want to keep going. I don't want to make it worse.
I don't want to say it can't get worse because it can.
No, don't say that.
No, don't say that. No, I'm not. That's the thing. I'm not jinxing it. I don't. 2017 has sucked. Flat out and simple. And we said 2016 sucked. So this is becoming a trend here. And, you know, things need to finally get better, and it just doesn't seem like it is, and it's concerning. And, you know, world sometimes is a dark place, but you have to look at some of the positives and try to find it in maybe in the littlest things or things that bring you comfort. And, you know, family, friends, comics, movies, TV, art, you know, sports, whatever brings you comfort, please don't take it for granted. You know, life is too precious for that. And speaking of precious, we got some great things coming up for you, Mr. Mike.
Yeah.
Well, what do we got? It's Halloween.
Yeah. And you mentioned it, you know, we take pleasure in the small things, and we hope as a small thing that we here on Earth Station One can give you guys a little bit of entertainment, a little bit of relief from the trouble. Certainly when we record, it's nice to do that. It's one of the things that makes Mondays bearable for me, because we actually record on Mondays. So, you know, as stressful as a usual Monday is, it's great to be here. So, that being said, we plan on being here, of course, all throughout October. And October is our countdown to Halloween. We're going to do it a little bit differently, as maybe some of you might have already noticed. Usually we devote every episode in October to Halloween or classic horror or horror-related subject matter. But due to the scheduling of we wanted to honor Len Wein, so we put that in this week. And next week is a premiere of the new Blade Runner movie, so we wanted to cover that for you guys. So we're going to have a limited schedule, but we're still going to do some really good stuff. We have our book club entry, which is in a couple of weeks, and we are going to be reviewing really thoroughly the novelization of Dracula by Bram Stoker. We're going to have a lot of fun with that. At least I hope so. So I know some people who are going to be joining us this will be the first time they've ever read it. So that'll be kind of interesting to see their take on it, as well as myself, who it's one of my favorite books. I'll say that outright. So I'm looking forward to talking all about it with y'all. So if you want to take part in that, you just even as a listener, add it to your reading list, download it, and you can check us out in a few weeks when we review it. And then after that, Mark Maddox is going to join us for a few episodes. He usually is our third co-host in October. So he will be back, and we are going to talk all about great horror cover artists. Of course, he is one of them. He is a current great cover artist, a two-time Rondo Award winner. I think you can safe to say that he is one of the great cover artists these days. We're also going to have a couple of other guests with us as well. We're going to honor the legacy of the recently departed Basil Gogos. And we're going to talk all about other great illustrators of the time. So that's going to be really fun. And then after that, we're going to spotlight one of the authors that helped create American Gothic. It was an inspiration to Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, Alfred Hitchcock, Stephen King, and countless other people. And I'm talking, of course, of Edgar Allan Poe. We will be diving into what made him a brief life. You know, he only lived till he was 40. But boy, what an impact. And he didn't even start writing until halfway through his life. So really, but, very,
but Mike,
very short.
You do realize that that was just because he lived in Baltimore, you know?
Yes, that takes its toll on you, does it? That's why you had to move out?
Oh, of course. You know, I wanted to live past 40.
So so we will be spotlighting Edgar Allan Poe. We've got some great guests lined up for that episode as well. And so, yeah, we're gonna do October right. We're going to bring you some treats and maybe a few tricks as well. So I'm looking forward to that. I love this time of year, despite the fact that there's really some horrible things going on around us. This is my favorite time of year. This is, you know, all about autumn. You know, we've already reached the autumn stage in the season, so the leaves are starting to turn, the weather's starting to get a little cooler, which I love. And you know, our Turner Classic Movies is starting to show a bunch of horror movies, so my DVR is filling up pretty fast because I'm constantly looking at their schedule going, yep, I want to watch that. And this time, this year, they've got a great lineup. They've got Sunday. Every Sunday, they're devoting to Dracula movies. So they already started this past Sunday with the original silent movie Nosferatu, as well as the 1931 film with Bela Lugosi. But yeah, they will be showing a lot of other Dracula-related movies throughout the month, every Sunday, including the Christopher Lee Hammer stuff, as well as some other crazy things like Billy the Kid versus Dracula, and of course Blackula, and a lot of other stuff. So I'm looking forward to some of these things I've never seen, and others I can't wait to see over and over again. So I'm really crazy about that. Every Tuesday night this month, they will be devoting to classic horror as well, covering the 1930s when Universal Pictures dominated the market of horror movies. And that continued in the 40s, and they did. There were some other movies made as well back then. The 50s and 60s, we're talking about Hammer. So you've got a lot of great, great, great movies. And, of course, the classics like Frankenstein, The Mummy, The Wolfman, The Invisible Man, those are all going to be shown. But then there's also going to be some ones that you haven't really, that aren't as familiar, that I'm looking forward to catching. The Devil's Bride, Isle of the Dead, Carnival of Souls, House on Haunted Hill, you know, The Bat, you know, things like that. Plague of Zombies, you know, Curse of the Werewolf, which will be a Turner Classic Movies premiere, actually. You know, things like that. I'm going to be filling up my DVR, and I'll try to get as much of them in October as I can. But to be honest, some of these things stay in my DVR for most of the year. And every once in a while, I'll be like, I feel like watching classic horror again. Boom, done. Great stuff. I can't thank the boys and girls at Turner Classic Movies enough for their lineups. And of course, all the networks get involved with Halloween programming to some extent, as well as comic community. A lot of comic stores will be doing Halloween. I think they call it Halloween Comic Day, something like that. That's where they have the mini comics that they give out to kids and adults as well. So check your local comic store for when they're going to be showing it. Because I think Halloween is on a weekday, right? That kind of stinks. But isn't it on a weekday this year?
Yes. Halloween is on a Tuesday this year.
Tuesday. Yeah. Well, that would be why Turner Classics Movies is showing horror movies every Tuesday this month. So, yeah, it's on a Tuesday. So most of the local comic shops will probably be doing something over the weekend, be it Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So like I said, you'll have to check your local comic shop. And if you don't know where one is, you can go to Free Comic Book Day. Actually, Free Comic Book Day website will have all the information on where you can find the local comic shops, and we'll have a link for that. There's a lot of the publishers are giving out some special comics to give out to, like I said, kids of all ages. So, which I consider myself one of. So I will be getting my free comics as well, and I'll be getting packs of them so I can give them out to trick or treaters. So
exactly. You do it very smart every year, my friend. No candy, but comic books.
Yeah, I give out comics every year, and that's usually met with some pretty good success. So I'm looking forward to doing that again this year. You know, we're getting ready. So the first two episodes this month are not going to be classic themed, we still want to hear from you guys about some of the things that are exciting to you guys at this time of year. As we count down to Halloween throughout the month, we'd love to hear like some of the things that you're excited about, some of the maybe the movies that you love, the classic movies, or, you know, whether you like to dress up, or some of your memories, or if you like to go to haunts. Because we have some really good friends that like to go down to Disney and Universal for their Halloween Horror Nights. And Six Flags has one here. And, of course, Netherworld is open. Lots of great stuff happening. And we would love to hear from you guys as far as how you like to celebrate Halloween and what you're looking forward to. So if you write us or send us an audio message, we will play that on our Rants and Raves section throughout the month. So I had to do that. That's you can't talk about Halloween.
Ooh, scary.
There you go. See, you're in the spirit. So and it's, you know, like I said, in these times of trouble and turmoil, it's nice to kind of just have something like comfort food. And for me, classic movies, in autumn, in October, Halloween, everything associated with that really makes me feel a lot more comfortable and puts me in a zone. And you can just kind of forget about that for a little while. I think that's one of the I think people have analyzed it better than I could, but there's something about seeing like horror movies that kind of gives you an escapist perspective on some of the horror that is reflected in real life. So, not to look too deep into it. Sometimes it's just fun stuff to watch.
Exactly. And that's the great thing. It's, you know, different people have different levels of horror that they can handle too.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Neither Mike or I really dig haunted houses. And, you know, but we know folks who are on the network and friends of ours who just love going to be scared out of their wits. You know, it's not my thing, but you know what? It's to each their own. And, you know, if someone wants to dress as a clown and scare the crap out of somebody in a movie, knock yourself out. I'll be watching Kingsman again. That's okay. but it's interesting because I like being scared in movies. I like, you know, a lot of thrillers, and I love a lot of the horror movies. I love the Hammer films and such, but I don't love gore. You know, I'm not a big, like, you know, Saw fan or, you know, movies like that, you know, where they just go for gore's sake. And I just don't do it. And I heard the stories and some of these are great. I just won't do it because of, you know, what they show and what they represent. It's just not my thing. And that's not Halloween to me. Halloween to me is Jack Skeleton and, you know, Snoopy and the Great Pumpkin and, you know, stuff like that. Like I say, though, to each their own. And everyone has what Halloween means to them. And that's the great thing about it. And, you know, some people like pumpkin spice stuff. Not me. You know, I could throw nutmeg on my stuff anytime, folks, you know. That's basically all pumpkin spices, right? you know, let you let in a little secret there. So, you know, take it from old man Mike here that, you know, it's not really pumpkin spice. There's nothing pumpkin about it. It's just nutmeg that they throw into the latte or into your cookies or whatever you get, you know, pumpkin spice on. That's just the little secret that they don't want you to know, that you can get it all year round if you wanted. Oh, well, man, I know I'm just rambling, but Halloween is always been great. It's always been about, you know, decorating and stuff like that and just having a lot of fun with it. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the shows we have coming up, and Mike always just has so much fun with his countdown to Halloween. So it's a plus.
Whee!
Exactly. See? That's his response to it. It's a good thing. But we definitely want to hear from you guys at home. You know, what does Halloween mean to you guys? You know, where do you do your haunted houses? Where do you do for your traditions? Do you have Halloween parties and stuff like that? We want to hear from you guys. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Geek Seat.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz, here to talk about the new movies coming out in theaters and on DVD. First up, we're going to talk about Blade Runner 2049. Now, anytime you're talking about a sequel to a well-loved film that's such an iconic science fiction classic like the original Blade Runner, it's always going to be a bit risky. However, I'm really excited to report that the buzz for this one is just fantastic. Critics are raving about it, saying it succeeds on a visual and storytelling level, which is exactly what you want to hear about a film like this. Harrison Ford is returning as Rick Deckard, and he's joined by a new Blade Runner, played by Ryan Gosling. Especially after Kingsman was a little bit of a letdown earlier this fall, I'm super excited to see Blade Runner. It looks awesome and thought-provoking. I can't wait. Although Blade Runner's probably going to be the biggest box office draw this weekend, we also have a movie called The Mountain Between Us, which strands Kate Winslet and Idris Elba on a remote mountain after a plane crash. These two strangers have to work together to survive in the wilderness until they can find help. Based on the reviews, this one's not a particularly groundbreaking film, but I love these two actors, so I'll probably catch this one on DVD. Finally, we have Victoria and Abdul, starring the one and only Judi Dench as Queen Victoria, and highlights her friendship with a young clerk from India. If you love PBS masterpiece theater shows like Downton Abbey, then this would probably be a good one for you. On DVD this week, we have one of the summer blockbusters, which is Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Now, Dead Men Tell No Tales didn't make a huge splash this summer. I think Pirates fans are feeling a little bit tired of the franchise, especially after the fourth one kind of had a ho-hum story and reception. Again, this one didn't do as huge at the box office as some might have been expecting, but it's actually a fun movie and returns the franchise to its roots at least a little bit. So if you skip this one in theaters, it's a fun rental, has kind of a return to the characters and the storylines that made the classic Pirates of the Caribbean movies so much fun. We also have The Book of Henry, which is Colin Trevorrow's poorly received film that may have contributed to his firing from Star Wars Episode 9. The reviews for this one are just absolutely awful, but if you're curious about why he might have gotten fired, you can always check this movie out. Well, that's it for this week. If you're looking for more entertainment content, be sure to check out my blog at boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
Spirit supernatural, or shy, what's all the fuss? But bags of bones seem so unsafe, if it's semi-serious. Spooky, scary skeletons are...
Hey everyone, welcome back. We are now here for the Geek Seat segment, and our victim, I mean guest this week is Tony Chastain. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Welcome to the station, sir. For those people who may not be familiar with your work, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been in the industry for a while now, but I've been working on Star Trek for about the past almost 4 years now. So I've done a pretty good long run on it. not sure if this one was the longest run, but definitely my longest run on anything.
It's pretty good. No, it's a pretty good run. Yeah, I was thinking to myself, has it been like 5 years almost? But yeah, your 5-year mission, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hope I don't get the boot after that. But yeah, it's been about 4 years, I guess, since they first asked me on. It took a little while to actually like clear my schedule and get onto it. But yeah, been consistently with them ever since.
Did you grow up a Star Trek fan? Is this like a really awesome? I mean, obviously it's a great gig, but
yeah. Yeah, I did. I was of the generation where it was just, I didn't see the original series when it first came out, but I saw it in reruns because this was back in the day when I only had, you had three channels and, it would come on Saturday afternoons. And my mom was a huge sci-fi fan. So she always got me into that, my uncles. So yeah, I finally remember watching the original series. And then at some point too, I would go to my uncle's house and they had HBO. And so I started seeing the movies. And I think it blew my mind when I was a kid because I didn't realize how big that world was. I've pretty much grown up with Star Trek. So this is absolutely a dream come true. I mean, I'm a huge sci-fi fan. I mean, I love comics and I love superheroes and things like that, but sci-fi is really that's my thing. So I could not imagine a better project.
Awesome. And like I said, you've been doing it for 4 years or so with IDW, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all been IDW. I mean, they do crossovers with DC, so I've been able to kind of play with that. But yeah, for Star Trek, it's all been IDW.
And a little bit of a mix with, because you've done the movie universe, you've done the recent movie universe, you've done, of course, mixed it up with the original series, even in a crossover, right?
Yeah. I mean, when I first, the first book I started doing with them was the Q Gambit. So it mixed in, Q from Next Generation and a good bit of Deep Space Nine as well.
Yes, very good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then I've been able to play with the original series, that crew, and I kind of touched on most everything. So, yeah, it's been fun.
And are you involved with just one Star Trek book right now or a couple or?
Right now, I was doing the covers for the Boldly Go.
Okay.
I was on that book doing the interiors as well, but they pulled me on to Discovery. So the new TV show. So I've been working on that book. We started a while back. It kind of got put on the back burner when the show itself
got reconfigured.
Yeah, a little bit. So now I'm back on it full time. So I'm doing covers, interiors, everything for that one. Well, everything, pencils and inks. JD Mettler's doing the colors on it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And the new Discovery comic, that is, it's a prequel to the prequel?
Yeah. It's trying to think about how much has actually been told about it. It's about the
Klingons, right?
Yeah, it's about the Klingons, and it's got it focuses on T'Kuvma, and kind of his backstory, how he got to his place of power. I think it's going to fill in a lot of the gaps for fans.
The solicitations are already out there, I believe, and of course I think it's the trade is already, for pre-order on Amazon. And I think they're calling it The Light of Kalis. So, which is a name that everybody who's interested in the Klingon should recognize.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, that's a little scary that it's already out for solicitations and trade as well. I really need to step it up, speed up the process a little bit. I used to be, and not that I used to be faster, but there's so much detail in this book that it is taking me a little longer than it has taken me previously. You've seen the costumes for the Klingons, I would assume.
I saw the premiere of Discovery. Yeah. They have a very different look, I think. Right.
Yeah, they do. They're a little bit closer to the designs from the Kelvin universe, the movie timeline.
Gotcha.
The most recent movie timeline. I mean, they're a little different from that as well, but they're pretty close to what J.J. Abrams was doing in the... I think he originally designed them for the first one, his first, the reboot.
Gotcha, but they just never appeared. Right.
Yeah, they got cut.
Yes, because there was a scene, yes, yeah, with the Romulan commander with them. And yeah, exactly. I guess it did get cut, right?
Yeah, that whole, the ship was like taken prisoner and they were...
Yep.
You know, yeah. So yeah, they got cut, but the designs were still out there. If you look, they're actually pretty similar to what we're seeing on the TV show. I mean, I know the TV show is supposed to be, I guess, based on the original timeline, but
yeah, it's a little murky because it takes place 10 years before Captain Kirk and the Enterprise, it looks pretty cool. Obviously, written by Mike Johnson, who's no stranger to IDW Star Trek.
Oh yeah,
and
he's been on it for a long time.
Yeah. I guess one of the staff writers of Discovery.
Yeah, Kirsten
yeah. Beyer.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
So I guess we can consider this canon, right?
Yeah, it's definitely canon, actually, because I mean, we were even working on last November, December, I started working on the comic, and some of the stuff that we were actually doing was put into the show. So it's
very nice.
Definitely tied together. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's tied together so much that you were telling me, and I saw your pictures on Instagram and everything. You were actually, you got to see the premiere like in a big grand setting.
Yeah, I went to my wife and I went to L.A. 2 weeks ago, I guess it was. We got invited to the premiere. The whole cast and crew were there. Yeah.
Walking the red carpet.
Yeah, I actually didn't end up walking the red carpet with my editor and I kind of slipped into the side, which was much better for me. It was nice actually being there with the cast. A lot of guys from the past with Trek. I mean, William Shatner was there.
Oh, very nice.
It was a who's who of Star Trek. So that was fun. I'd never done anything like that before, so we were excited.
Yeah, I don't think I know what to do with myself at one of those. It just seems like such a alien experience for me. I've seen it on TV, of course, but
yeah. Yeah, it was pretty interesting. It was one of those things where we didn't exactly even know how to dress. So we just dressed right. like we were the stars. And it worked out. It worked out.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It was. Yeah, it was fun though. It was actually really cool to actually see it on the big screen too, because I mean, the TV show, I'm assuming you guys have seen at least the first one, right?
I saw the first one, the CBS airing of the first episode, and Paramount or CBS rather dropped a lot of money into this. That's
a lot of money. And that's the thing too. It's like the way that they're doing this. And I guess the reason that people are paying for it and that it's on Netflix and Netflix is paying for it as well. I mean, they're dumping a lot of money into the production of the show, and it looks cinematic to me. So I guess you get what you pay for.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's cool that you got to experience that, and it's good of CBS to include you guys.
Yeah, definitely. No, it was nice.
So, yes, we have a tradition here. If you're visiting with us, then we have to, we don't have a captain's chair, but we have the geek seat. So,
that's like good.
So we are... he is all ready and prepped, Mike. I am strapping him down as we speak, and he's ready to go.
Wow, this just makes a Monday so much better. So Tony is basically going to go where no one has gone before. Oh, sorry.
No, a lot of people have gone.
Yeah, I know. They're still stuck there. That's the problem.
They're still there.
Yeah. So, Tony, are you ready for your first question in the Geek Seats?
I'm ready.
All right. Tony. What was your favorite geek out moment?
Oh, favorite geek out moment. It probably was the premiere. I standing, feet away from the cast and crew and seeing William Shatner and Uhura. I mean, obviously that's not her real name, but and just being part of that, a little piece of that history, was a huge geek out moment for me. And I normally don't get too terribly excited about, much of anything when it comes to that. But that was definitely one word to give you chills. So that would have to be it for me.
No, I totally understand that. Yeah, because okay. You're living the dream, man. You are there, you know, for the premiere. And who's who in the Star Trek universe is pretty much there.
Exactly. Wow. Exactly.
I guess I should be going, we're not worthy, we're not.
Yeah, I definitely was not.
No, I'd be doing that to you, sir.
Oh, God, no.
What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Oh, God. That's really tough to say, too. When it comes to, I don't know. I mean, I'll just stick with the Trek theme since it's kind of what my brain has been on Trek mode for a while. I mean, there are a handful of the movies, obviously. There were disappointments. The last one that came out, was more of a disappointment to me than any of the other ones.
Really?
Yeah. And everybody loved it. I mean, it got high praise, I guess. But I don't know if I just expected something different or if I had just become so familiar with maybe what I thought that the crew was and how that they would react. It didn't feel quite as genuine to me, if that makes sense. So the last movie was a bit of a disappointment for me.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I know that I probably shouldn't even say that, but I'm just being honest right now.
No, I'm glad you're being honest, but what geeks you out the most?
What geeks me out the most? Just really well done sequential art geeks me out the most. Seeing guys at the top of their game, you know, seeing like amazing work by guys like, you know, Brian Stelfreeze or Chris Bruner or, you know, anybody that's just like really putting out the effort and raising the art form. It always geeks me out. And probably shouldn't say that either, but I'm also not like, I am a comic book fan, obviously, but I don't make it to the comic book shop as much as most people do. So when I do go and I'm able to just pour over the work, I feel like a kid again. That would have to be the biggest for me.
Okay. What turns your geek off, though?
Oh, what turns it off? I don't know. That's tough. Probably just being a little closer to the industry than I used to be. You know, anytime something gets turned into work, you really do have to remind yourself. You do have to search out those moments and like find the guys that are, you know, really making like impressing you, like the guys I just mentioned. Because otherwise, it's really easy to get kind of deep into the business side of comics, and that can definitely be a turnoff.
Oh, I could totally understand that. It kind of loses its magic if you get too much into the business side.
Yeah, it really does. And I've been doing everything I can lately to try to kind of keep that fire going. Just trying to make it to the comic shop on a regular basis, visiting as many comic shops as I can in the Portland area because I'm new to it. Just trying to rekindle some of that I had when I was a kid, what made me love it to begin with.
No, I totally understand that. It's neat, especially coming into a new city and trying to find out all the cool comic shops and everything. And, you know, who knows what they're really talking about and, you know, something that fits your personality and such.
Yeah, exactly. And I was really lucky. There's one, not even a half mile down the road, it's walking distance. And it's called the Cosmic Monkey. And it's
love an the amazing name.
Show. Yeah, it's a really good name. But I mean, T-Faw's right down the street. I mean, I could walk to two comic shops, which is huge for me. Just coming from the Atlanta area where you're used to driving to everything, it's great just having one that you can walk to. And it's a great shop too.
But then you also have Pals, so it's even better, you know?
Yeah. I made it there a couple of times, which is great. But yeah. But yeah, that's the thing I like about Portland, where I am right now, is the fact that everything is so walkable.
It's a great city for that.
Yeah.
That is awesome. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Ooh, fictional character. Probably Kirk. Original Kirk. The original series Kirk.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he seems like a fun guy.
That's
fun guy to have a drink with, you know?
Oh, sure. No, totally understand that. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Probably, again, if we're sticking with the Star Trek theme, probably have to go with Khan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The original Khan, not the...
of course.
Not the
course.
Sherlock Khan.
Yeah. Although I was a fan of his as well. I thought he did a great job. I'm a fan of the actor, but yeah. Yeah, original Khan. That would not awesome. Be pleasant.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Phrase. You did say phrase, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Phrase? Okay.
Yeah.
These are all tough. I mean, live long and prosper is obviously a good one. I don't say any of these on a regular basis, so it's kind of hard to say. We'll just stick with that one. We'll stick with the theme. I don't think I have too terribly many geek words that I know of or phrases that I actually would use on a regular basis. I'm probably the worst geek possible for you to have on the show.
No, you're good. That's all right. What is your ideal geek occupation?
I think I'm living it, actually. I mean, really. I mean, during Star Trek.
For a living.
For a living. I honestly don't think I could get better than that. I mean, if they throw some Star Wars in, you know, that'd be good, too. Do a little Alien, things like that. I mean, there's so many, like, sci-fi books that I want to work on. But, I mean, the fact that I actually can play in that sandbox is huge. So, yeah, that's always what I wanted to do. So, I'm living that.
That is awesome, though, man. That is really awesome. You know, come on, think about it. Drawing Star Trek all the time, you know?
Right, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
You know?
And I do have to remind myself, too. It's not, you know, it's always a business, and, you know, there's deadlines and things like that, and you get rushed and things. But, I mean, at least daily, I sit back and I say, you know, this is a good thing. I'm drawing Star Trek every single day. I can't complain. And I do remind myself anytime I try to complain. I have no right to do that.
No, totally understand. It's like, come on, you know, this is what I was drawing in fourth grade, drawing on notebook paper.
Yeah, for free.
Exactly. That's just awesome. What geek occupation would you like not to do?
Oh, God. Most any other ones, especially ones that I have to go into an office, because I did that previously, because I was a designer before I got into illustration and comics. And although I loved doing the work of a designer, anytime I have to go in and sit at a cubicle, that is not my thing. I mean, I'd rather be outside digging ditches than sitting in a cubicle.
So, no, totally understand that.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty much anything in an office would be miserable for me.
Oh, yeah.
Not cut it out for it anymore.
I do understand that. I say that every day I go into my office. I'm not cut out for this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore.
I'm sorry. That sounds horrible.
Oh, dude, you have no idea. You so have no idea. What is your ultimate geek fantasy? This is your final question.
Ultimate geek fantasy. Oh, man. It feels like I should have prepared for these a little bit better. My brain is like half functioning today. I definitely needed more caffeine.
Come on, you live in the caffeine capital of the world. Come on.
I know, exactly. if I were to have anything fantasy-wise, having access to the holodeck would pretty much be... I mean, if you had access to that, you could... I mean, you're open to pretty much any fantasy you want. You can live out anything. So just having access to that would be on the top of the list. And that would cover everything. That's like getting, you know, like getting a genie to like give you all the wishes that you want.
Yeah, you know? Asking for more wishes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's rule number one. No asking for more wishes.
Right.
Just ask for a holodeck. That's the next best thing.
Right? Exactly.
That is awesome, man. That is awesome. Well, sir. Congratulations. You have made it through the Geek Seat. Mr. Mike Gordon, tell Tony what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $6.04.
Excellent. I'll take it. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate you spending some time with us. And for those people who are listening and want to check out the new Star Trek Discovery miniseries. I believe the first issue hits. It's sometime this month, right?
It should be. It might be a little bit behind if you're looking at the solicitations, but hopefully won't be too terribly late.
Gotcha. Well, it is scheduled. So check with your local comic shop or wherever you buy comics to check that out, as well as pick up some of the other trades that are available with your work on it, too. I'm a big fan, and I'm excited for you, man. This is great stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So very cool, Mike.
Tony, thank you so much for joining us. And we definitely would love to have you back up on the show sometime soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You're going to be tied with us, so hey, you know, the Geek Seat never forgets.
Anytime. Just let me know when. I'll be there.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment, and we're going to be talking all about Len Wein.
Hey, Michelle, Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. That's some bad news coming out of Rock and Roll Tours. Get well wishes go to Steven Tyler. Aerosmith was on tour in Brazil, and Tyler had a seizure on stage due to an ailment that hasn't been disclosed. He had to immediately come back to the United States for treatment, and the rest of Aerosmith's South American tour is canceled. Tyler put out a release and said it's not life-threatening, but he has to get it taken care of. So good wishes there. And also to Marilyn Manson, whose tour is not off to a good start. On Friday night, September 29th in Pittsburgh, he jumped off the stage, climbed back up, and said he thought he broke his ankle. The next night in New York, he was on stage, so that's probably not the case. But that night, a piece of his stage set was shaped like a giant pair of pistols, fell over on him from behind, and he was down on the floor for, people there estimate, 10 to 15 minutes before EMS could get him off stage on a stretcher. There's fan footage of this out on the internet, and it's kind of harrowing to watch, so hoping that it looks worse than it is and he's not severely injured. On Sunday, October 1st, the official word was that he will be okay, but no detail on his status or that of the tour. So, good wishes to him also. If you have some spare money lying around, a spare $2,250, and you want to buy 150 shares in Eminem, now's your chance. FBT Productions helped develop him, and they have a royalty payment for his sales, downloads, his streams, and licensing for films and commercials. Of course, he did that Chrysler commercial a few years ago. He hasn't had an album since 2013, but he's number 11 on the top streaming artist list. And his greatest hits, Curtain Call, is top 50, number 46 on this week's Billboard. So he does sell some music. Possible investment opportunity for you. Pat Benatar has a new song and a video out called Dancing Through the Wreckage, and it's the end title track to a documentary called Served Like a Girl that follows female military vets competing in the Ms. Veteran America pageant to raise awareness for the 55,000 homeless female veterans in the U.S. The track was written and produced with Linda Perry. It's got footage. The video has footage of her cut in with the documentary footage. The soundtrack has new songs from Pink, Gwen Stefani, Natasha Bedingfield, and Christina Aguilera. The documentary opened last month, and it's slowly making its way across the country. A lot of talk right now about respect and respecting veterans. And the fact that there's any homeless veterans of any gender identification is, it's kind of mind-blowing and tragic, and maybe that's what we need to be talking about right now. In super deluxe edition news, Emerson, Lake & Palmer's Fanfare 1970 to 1997 box set is now out. 18 discs, a Blu-ray disc, 2 7-inch discs, and 5 vinyl albums. That's a lot of prog. Nikki Sixx has been named as one of the musical mentors on a brand new Canadian show called The Launch. It's 6 parts, and artists will team up with unsigned talent to write hit songs. Yeah, because this is how you make good music, people. The mentors are Boy George, Alessia Cara, Julia Michaels, Jennifer Nettles, and Shania Twain and Fergie. I'll be busy, sorry. Canada, you've been warned. And word is going around that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominations will be announced this coming week. Yippee! Of course, the ballot will be posted online and the fan vote will be open to the public. So hopefully we will be talking about that very, very soon. Gold Derby finished up their 3 parts of polls with the male artists. They had Jimmy Buffett on their list. I can promise you, that is not going to happen. My predictions are up at iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com, and there's links to the other Hall of Fame bloggers in the web rings, so check them out and see what you think, and we'll see how close we came to the mark next week. Talk to you then.
Hey everyone, welcome back. We are now going to be talking about a true comic legend who just recently passed from us. We are going to be talking about writer, editor, creator, Len Wein. Worked mostly with DC, but he did some independent, and he also worked with Marvel, and he is basically everything you're watching in the movies, everything you're watching on TV, everything you're reading at the comic book store, he's had his fingers in. And it's just amazing when we start getting into this, how much he has in the modern comic history. Probably from 1970 on, if you read a comic book, Len Wein had some kind of, you know, influence on it. And we have a great crew to talk all about this. Of course, joining us from Chickatown is Kevin from the Flopcast.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Wow, haven't heard from you since DragonCon.
I did see you both very recently down in Atlanta. That is correct. What a time we had at DragonCon. I'm still kind of exhausted. I'm still shaking the con crud, but good to be back here on the station.
Oh, it is pretty amazing, you know, thinking that it's just a month ago now, and it still feels like
that month. It flies by, doesn't it? That first month after DragonCon? Yikes.
Yes.
I feel like I just got back.
Yeah, boy, are your arms tired. And speaking of DragonCon, we have a friend of ours from DragonCon joining us. Let's welcome Tony. Tony, you want to tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Hey, everybody. My name is Tony Barletta, and this year I was the comic programming director for the first time ever. And, you know, put on I think we put on like 44 comic book panels this year. An awful lot of great comic book programming for everybody. I've been a lifelong comic book fan. Have probably more comics than most comic book stores. So I know an awful lot about comic books.
No, it's pretty awesome. You know, the comic book track is one of my favorites because I love, you know, comics, and I've been a comic collector since I was a little kid, and you guys get to talk all about it the whole time at Dragon Con.
Yeah, I mean, that essentially is the selling point for being the director. I get to put all the great programs together I want to see because I'm looking at the guest list saying there needs to be a panel for this. I really want to see it. So I put it together and I get to see it. And that's very rewarding to me because I get to learn so much about comic books, and I'm just such a huge comic book fan.
Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty awesome, I'm sure, that you got to do that. Did you guys have, like, any hands-off stuff? Like, hey, no, sorry, that's going to be handled by the American, you know, science fiction track?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it would be great if we could use actors. I think they overlap between actors and comic book guests. I wish they could. I mean, you know, one of my early ideas was a Judge Dredd panel with Carl Urban, comparing his movie Dredd to the comic books, and that was shot down. But, you know, there's still lots of, I mean, the one great part about being director of comics programming is there are so many guests, whereas other tracks don't have anywhere near the number of guests we do, so we can have so much programming with all those guests and so many different combinations of them.
Mm-hmm. I could totally understand that. And that's pretty awesome. Well, thank you for joining us for this topic. So it's right up your alley, pretty much.
Yes, great to be here.
So, all right, let's talk about Len. For me, you know, when I think of Len Wein, of course, Swamp Thing comes to mind, but also Wolverine. You know, two major forces from two different companies.
In most cases, yeah. Well, Wolverine is, you know, one of the top heroes, like, of all time. So, of course, that's the one that I think most people associated with. And yeah, oddly enough, Swamp Thing as well. I mean, yeah, talk about a creation that really went a lot further than anybody could have expected.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And, you know, he also created the new X-Men. He was a co-creator with Dave Cockrum.
Absolutely, yeah. He wrote that first issue. Most people probably might overlook that and think it was Claremont, but Claremont didn't come on until it was 94, I believe, right after Giant Size. Giant Size was all Len Wein. All those characters that people recognize, Storm and Colossus and Nightcrawler, you know, and of course Wolverine, that was all Len Wein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. I mean, like, that's enough, right? So, like, even if you don't do anything else with your career, that right there seals you in the record books. But of course, you know, he was responsible for so much more. Does anybody remember, or can anybody recall, like, the first time that they really realized that they actually realized, okay, this, like, Len Wein is somebody that I need to keep reading his books because I really enjoy them? Like, was there a specific book or issue that grabbed you guys? Kevin?
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think. I'm not sure if there's really a specific. It was more of a slow build for me, I think, with Len Wein. I was more of a DC kid than a Marvel, certainly. And my time really becoming a regular, serious comics reader really coincided with when Len made the jump from Marvel back to DC in the late 70s. So I was reading the Batman comics back then, 1979, 1980, and Len was the regular Batman writer for that stretch, and he was just doing a supervillain every month fighting Batman and Two-Face, Riddler, those kind of characters, Catwoman, but also dipping into the obscure stuff, the goofy characters, Calendar Man, he did an issue with, and Kite Man.
So and Crazy Quilt.
Crazy Quilt, yes. Just this crazy run of Batman issues, and those might have been some of the first Len Wein stories that I read. And then also the Untold Legend of the Batman, the miniseries from around that time as well. So it was probably that early Batman stuff would have been my first exposure to his work.
Yeah, I think that was the first time. I probably read some of his material beforehand, but as a Batman guy, that miniseries, Untold Legend of the Batman, really just blew me away. I still cherish that three-issue series a lot, because it opened up and really told me things about Batman that I hadn't really considered before. And it was a really effective story and really well done, well written, and just everything I loved about Batman was in that series at that time.
Yeah, that was really a special series, and it was only the second miniseries ever. They did World of Krypton before that, but that was the second time they'd done anything like that, and John Byrne drew the first issue, so it was a very unusual looking comic for DC and really special.
Yeah. See, for me, it was more of, you know, Justice League when he brought back like the Freedom Fighters and, you know, items like that, because he did, for, I think, from issue 100 all the way to 114.
Yeah, that mid-70s run. And he exactly. did Freedom Fighters and the Seven Soldiers of Victory.
Exactly.
As well, he brought back.
Exactly. And that's because they were basically, that's when because they've had the JSA-JLA crossover since the mid-60s. But then they started making it that each one brought in the crossover brought back, you know, other teams from the Golden Age or even in the future, because they even teamed later with the Legion and such. And it was a neat experience to see that, because it made this great crossover even more epic. It, like you said, Kevin, they brought back the Seven Soldiers of Victory and then also the Freedom Fighters, who hadn't been, these characters hadn't been seen since the 1940s.
Yeah. I mean, this was that era. Len came up in the late 60s, early 70s. That was that era, that wave of fans turned pros for the first time. That was really the first time you had this generation of young creators coming in who had grown up as comics fans. You know, before that, it was, for the most part, the people that the comics creators of the Silver Age were the same people that were making comics in the Golden Age. You know, that there wasn't really a lot of turnover. It was just those guys who were getting on in years had been cranking out these books for decades. Len was part of that new wave of creators, and they were fans before they became creators. So they were just having such a great time in the 70s playing with that sandbox. And yeah, let's dip back to all these characters that we have access to. So they just wanted to bring everything in, and it was that's what made the Bronze Age such an exciting time.
No, exactly. And it's just like, and then as he got into, you know, the 1980s and such, Len became an editor, and he was the editor on Watchmen.
Yeah. I mean, he had a history with Alan Moore and with Dave Gibbons leading up to that. He edited so much at DC in the early to mid 80s. I'm sure we'll talk about Swamp Thing as we go along, but the famous Alan Moore revival of Swamp Thing, Len was editing the Swamp Thing comic at that time before it got handed off to Karen Berger. You know, Len was the editor, so that was his creation, of course, but he was also the guy that hired Alan Moore to come in on that book. And then meanwhile, Len was also writing Green Lantern for a good long stretch in the mid-80s, and the artist on Green Lantern at the time, exactly, was Dave Gibbons.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
I remember back when he edited Watchmen, of course, it was famous because of him telling Alan Moore that his ending wasn't good enough, that he was phoning it in and just copying The Outer Limits. And, he admitted he was right. It's, you know, how many people tell Alan Moore they're wrong? I mean...
You know, it's. Can you imagine trying to say, no, you're not doing that right. Do it this way instead. Yeah, I don't know about that. So, but it's.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean, I don't know when I first recognized Len Wein's name. I grew up reading comics all my life, but mid-80s definitely is when I started getting into it. And I can't say what Len was doing right around that time other than Watchmen, but, you know, I went to a convention, one of the big cons in Pittsburgh, and got to meet him face-to-face in the mid-90s, and I ended up lucking into a copy of Giant Size X-Men for $20 someone sold me. Imagine that, $20. And I got that signed, and I got an early Swamp Thing signed. I mean, you know, I mean, how often do you get to meet someone who's created so many iconic characters?
That's cool. I must admit, in all my conventions that I've done and everything like that, I have not got a chance to meet him. And I regret that because he definitely was an impact on not only my life, but all the characters that I cared about, you know, like I said previously with Batman, and he had a pretty good run on Amazing Spider-Man. That Len's the kind of guy who, you know, I don't think there was a lot of, like, you never really saw like sexy promotions like, hey, Len Wein's on this book, right? It was more like he just came in and just worked and just did the work. The books were, the stories were solid. I don't know if he was ever really a big headliner, but he was a constant, reliable go-to guy. And a lot of times, you know, his creations would go on to have, you know, somebody else really be like explode with them, you know, except for the case I would say with Swamp Thing, because I think Swamp Thing was one that he and Bernie Wrightson kind of nurtured together. And I think that's one of the reasons why Len's is so associated with Swamp Thing more than some of his other creations, because he was, you know, he was really a big part of that. It's probably the best known and his most iconic run, his signature run, so to speak.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And, you know, and because since he was editing, you know, he all the way through when Swamp Thing came back, it was just like, that was his baby, and he cared for it. And when Karen came on as editor, he gladly handed off the reins to her because he knew it was in good hands.
I remember Bernie Wrightson telling the story at Dragon Con years ago, how the two of them had looked at the copyright for Swamp Thing pretty heavily. I think Len's wife at the time had been a lawyer, and there was a period where they forgot to renew the copyright. So the two of them went and bought the copyright. And Bernie said, now what do we do? I don't want to draw Swamp Thing anymore. And Len's like, I don't want to write it anymore. So they negotiated with DC to get it back. But their name has always been prominently featured in the credits after that, created by Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson.
And I don't, you know, I'd like to think sometimes I know that the comic industry is known as being like really cruel, especially the big companies compare, you know, the way they treat their creators. And there's endless stories of that. And, but I would like to think that in some way that the reason that we've seen so much of Swamp Thing lately is because DC was trying to make Len's last few years comfortable. You know, I mean, Swamp Thing appeared in Justice League Action. He appeared in the animated series. That animated series, he appeared in the last Harley Quinn animated thing, that Batman Harley Quinn that they just released last month. He was in Justice League Dark. He was showing up in the DC video game where they fight each other.
Oh, Injustice.
Yeah, he was showing up as a big character, like a dominating character in Injustice. And I was like, wow, why is there so much Swamp Thing lately? And I kind of like to think that maybe DC was going, let's try to make Len a little bit more comfortable here.
The last Swamp Thing series, if I'm not mistaken, was the Convergence and Post-Convergence run by Len Wein and Kelly Jones.
Yes, it was one of the last few things that he wrote, that and people should really pick this up too. One of the last things that had Len's name on it was the Batman 66 special with Two-Face. That was originally, it was a script by, I want to say, was it Harlan Ellison?
Yes.
It was,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and Len adapted it for comics. And, you know, as soon as I saw Len's name on it, I was like, okay, this is going to be good. This is going to work. Because Len can, if anybody can adapt, you know, Harlan Ellison to make sense, it's Len Wein. And it's good. It's a good story. It's one of those things where like, oh, wow. I don't know how, you know, I know that they've got one, an animated Two-Face coming up with Batman 66. So I don't know if it's related at all, but probably not. But then again, you know, we'll see how angry Harlan gets when it's released.
I remember Harlan saying he wrote that back at one of my early Dragon Cons I've been to in the late 90s. It's something he always has been out there and nobody had done anything with it.
Yeah, for the longest time, DC just didn't acknowledge Batman 66. And I think I'd heard that it was because Paul Levitz was not a fan. So under his regime, that was never going to – nothing was ever going to be done. And as soon as he stepped down, DC was like, hey, let's do some stuff with Batman 66 now. And it's been out there ever since. So I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've heard. But in any case – I think we should also mention that Len during Len's run on Batman on Detective, he created two characters that made it to TV and one made it to movies. One made it to TV twice, and that is Christopher Chance, the Human Target, because Human Target appeared in backup features in Detective.
Human Target was never had his own TV show.
Yeah, a couple of times. He had his own series, right? He had the Rick Springfield series of the early 90s.
The Rick Springfield series, yeah. Was that actually a series, Kevin, or was that just a pilot?
It was a series. I watched it.
It was a series briefly. Come on, Rick Springfield.
It was the people that created the Flash series with John Wesley Shipp. DeMeo and
Tim
creators, yeah.
But yeah, and then there was the more recent series as well, and plus they've also used the character as Tony mentioned, on Arrow, and it's really amazing that this was not really a superhero character, and certainly a very minor character at DC, but has really had so many shots in mainstream media since then, and those are cool stories too. If you go back to, I think it was the artist on the first Human Target story was Carmine Infantino, but then I believe Dick Giordano drew most of the strips after that. So they're great looking stories.
Yeah. Have those been collected?
Not that I know of.
They should be. They should be.
They're kind of hard to find. They're short stories, kind of backup strips. So they're kind of scattered.
Yeah. Yeah. If you wanted to, I would imagine it would be nice to have like a sort of a complete run of them. The other character that he created during that time, which I have heard now, and I don't know if this is true, but I've heard that he's gotten more residuals from creating this character than any other character that he's created. And that includes like Wolverine, but is Lucius Fox. Fox, who's appeared in, of course, the animated series. He's appeared in, of course, the movies. And he's on Gotham as well. So Len got a little check for that. And I'd heard that he got paid more for creating Lucius Fox than he ever had any of his other characters.
Even more than Wolverine? Wow.
Even more than Wolverine. Well,
yeah, so it all depends on the deal, you know. Yeah. So if he doesn't have a good deal with Marvel, then I could completely see that being the case. And that goes back to that run on Batman in the late 70s that we mentioned before. That's when Lucius Fox was first introduced.
Yep. And like I said, and I've always heard that DC has a better policy regarding creators and making sure they're compensated than Marvel does. And I don't know if that's, you know, I guess it all depends on who you talk to. But that's one thing that I've heard.
I think so. I think especially under Jeanette Kahn and Paul Levitz in the 80s, they really built up their program for compensating their creators. And I know I've heard George Perez speak about that, how he's very well taken care of with the video games and whatnot. You know, he makes a very good living just based on what he's getting from creator royalties.
Bob Layton said the same thing, that he's made, you know, more from creating, by co-creating, just being the inker who created Huntress, as opposed to working all those years on Iron Man, that Marvel just won't compensate.
Wow.
Or hasn't up until now, I guess.
Now, another figure that Len co-created, was part of, helped co-create, that you see in a lot, probably maybe more than any other DC character has appeared in media, and that's Amanda Waller.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, oh. He,
series, that was Len. Okay.
Yep. Legends, Legends was John Ostrander with Len Wein, and John Byrne was the artist. So the three of them are listed as the creators of Amanda Waller.
The Wall.
And she's been, you know, she was in the animated series for Justice League. She was in Green Lantern. She was in any animated series that you can think of. She was in Suicide Squad, of course. She was in Arrow. She's been depicted a lot.
Wasn't she also in Smallville?
Yes, I think you're right.
See?
Yeah, she's been depicted. Yeah, she was Pam Grier in Smallville. How could I remember? How could I forget that? You have to think about it. Especially for a character like herself, like you wouldn't expect it, but she pops up everywhere.
That's awesome.
Now that you mention it, I do believe, wasn't he also the scripter for George Perez's first issue of Wonder Woman?
Yes.
Perez run? He did co-write some of those. Yes. Because I think George wanted to write it, but DC was uncomfortable because I don't think had he ever written a series before?
No, I mean, I'd heard that when he was doing Titans, he'd get together at lunch with Marv Wolfman, and Marv would just tell him the story over lunch, and he'd just take notes and interpret it and take it from there. And so there was a lot of collaboration, so he was ready to do it. But, yeah, it's the first time he ever really solo wrote something, so they probably were a bit nervous.
Yeah, I know that they wanted someone to sort of just be with George for the first few issues of Wonder Woman, and I think you might be right. I think that was, I'm checking now, but I think that was Len.
Yeah, I think Greg Potter was involved also, if I'm remembering correctly, and Len had a hand in the series for the first 15, 16 issues, I think, as well.
Yeah, and this is fresh off her kind of reboot after Crisis, and probably more definitive than almost any other run from Wonder Woman in her history,
and
I would say.
Speaking of Crisis and speaking of Definitive, Len was also very involved in Crisis on Infinite Earths and Who's Who, the Definitive Directory of the DC Universe at that time.
Yeah, did he now? What did he do with Crisis?
He edited, I believe at one time he was going to co-write it with Marv Wolfman. Because obviously they had a long history working together, going way back to the first, one of their first professional writing assignments was an issue of Teen Titans way back in the late 60s. And Len was the editor on New Teen Titans as well when that series started. And I think they were going to co-write Crisis. And then Len stepped into more on the editorial side as the project went along, as well as the Who's Who, encyclopedia series that came out at the same time.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing how much stuff he did, because all the stuff DC was putting out in conjunction with, you know, the thing, because they even did a history of the DC universe that he was the editor on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was done by Marv and George. And it was just, you know, he was had his hands in everything there.
Oh, his output when he came back to DC, when you think of just the creative output and the editorial output at the same time, is staggering. That guy was working. I mean, All-Star Squadron also, he was the editor on for quite a while. I was thinking about this today, just that time period, that late 70s into the 80s, when you think of all the creators, especially writers, who jumped from Marvel over to DC, and it was Len, Marv Wolfman, Roy Thomas, Jerry Conway, and even a few more. And
John Byrne, I think that's too, right?
John Byrne really credited Jeanette Kahn that she was just pulling everybody over from Marvel to DC, and that creative explosion that they had at DC was largely built on just everybody jumping from one company to the other to work for Jeanette.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That way, but that makes perfect sense.
I did just check it, just to clarify. So the 1987 Wonder Woman run started with George and Potter for the first two issues. Len co-wrote starting with issue 3 and went to issue 16, and then it was George from there on out. But during that run, he also is credited with George as co-creating the post-crisis cheetah.
Ah.
The Barbara Minerva cheetah. So I don't know if we'll ever see cheetah on the big screen. I would think that there's hope with Wonder Woman doing as well as she has. And I think cheetah is usually associated as one of her biggest villains. So I would think that at some point we'll get to see her in live action form, but we'll see.
And I mean, the first Wonder Woman movie was Ares, right out of George Perez's run. So
right. Yes, it's true.
It's probably right around the corner.
That would be nice. I would love to see what they would do with that. You know, I would. But I think that's the thing. I mean, we look back and that to me is the testament of, like I said, Len's work, is that he just worked so much and he was so consistent over, was it 4 decades? 5?
Yeah, probably, you know, more like 5.
More like 5, because he was working all the way until recently, truthfully. Yeah. You know,
he came out with that Batman 66 special last year. So, and when he first started, I didn't know this until he passed, and I was looking over some of some of the lists of everything that he'd done, and I didn't realize he did a lot of work for like Gold Key and some of those old Star Trek issues that I used to enjoy, like the one with the space pirates. I was like, oh, that's Len. Oh my goodness, I had no idea. I can only imagine that if I had met him at a con and I had brought my issue of the space pirate Star Trek, I imagine he would be like, wow, that's obscure. Because I don't even know if his name's in those. I don't know if the Gold Key was really good about announcing their.
Yeah, I don't think they had creator credits in those books.
Yeah.
But that was that. Yeah, that early 70s, those guys, the writers back then, were just grabbing whatever work they could. So you'll find some weird credits like that.
Well, exactly. And it's interesting because later he, you know, went on, you know, he continued working, like we said, into the 2010s. And, you know, he did the before Watchmen miniseries, he did the Ozymandias miniseries. And he actually, the hardcover of that actually became a bestseller in 2013 on the New York Times.
He did one of the one shots as well, I think, too.
Yeah. So it was actually pretty cool. And then I found out, you know, William actually told me that. Oh, Len Wein, he wrote episodes of Ben 10.
Yes. Yeah, he did a lot of animation writing.
Yeah.
He did. In fact, it was because we were celebrating the anniversary of Batman the Animated Series, I popped in a few episodes to watch. This is when I recently appeared on Earth Station DCU with Drew and Cletus. And we were talking about the series and how wonderful it was. And to prepare, one of the episodes that I watched was the two-parter that introduced Ra's al Ghul. And sure enough, Len's name pops up as as the writer on the second episode, where it's an adaptation of the Denny O'Neill story.
Was the first one written by Denny?
Denny's credited with the story. but on both parts, but Len is only credited with the script for the second part. So I'm not sure exactly how that worked, but I was just like, well, of course he contributed. Like, you know, it gets to a point where you're not surprised to see his name.
Right.
You know, you're just like, who did this? Oh, Len did this. Okay, that's cool. That mm-hmm. makes sense now.
When you look at his Marvel work, it's interesting. I know Neil Adams loves to say at conventions about how when he met Stan Lee, Stan Lee told him he could write anything. And he said, what's your worst selling book? Well, X-Men. Okay, well, give me X-Men. So he loved to tell the story as though it was his and Roy Thomas's run that saved the title. But in reality, it was pretty much dead until Len Wein's giant-size X-Men came along and with a whole new team. And the reason it became the top-selling comic throughout the 80s, of course, Chris Claremont, but Len Wein got the whole thing rolling.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, amazing art by Dave Cockrum. And, you know, X-Men were laughed at before this. It was basically, oh, the X-Men? Oh, those guys are jokes, you know. And then basically Len came in, reinvented, you know, only took one member from the old team and introduced all brand new characters. And they took a chance at it, and it literally became the biggest selling comic of the 1980s, pretty much, until Dark Knight and such. So it was just amazing. You know, the run that the X-Men had from when Len started with Giant Size X-Men all the way through the Dark Phoenix saga is must read for anyone.
I mean, people might not realize. I mean, people were not buying X-Men. I mean, it was the book nobody touched that Stan Lee created. And when he left, Roy Thomas and Neil Adams, I mean, nobody really, and even the Steranko covers, I mean, nobody really touched X-Men until Giant Size X-Men, and it took off.
Well, actually, at this point, X-Men had been stopped for 5 years. They had just been reprinting the old stories.
Yeah.
By that point, that's why they gave Len a chance at it to reinvent the series. And because they spun Beast off into his own title, and then he became an Avenger by that point. And they made him blue and furry.
Sure, just put the characters in somewhere else because the title was going away. And same thing they tried with Fantastic Four recently. Mm-hmm. Try to put things on the Guardians of the Galaxy, and yeah.
Exactly. It's interesting to see what happens, you know, with these characters. And Len, like I said, you know, I'm looking through, you know, what he was editing, and you know, he, you know, put out there, he was the editor on DC's first maxi series, which was Camelot 3000.
Wow.
And
wow.
And it's just amazing. You know, you, like I said at the beginning of this segment, you name a comic in that era, he had his fingers in it.
Was that Brian Bolland's first extended work at DC?
Yeah. That's why it took so long for that thing to come out.
After that, they said, you know what, Brian, you just do covers from now on.
But because it was funny, because I think Camelot 3000 took me all the way through high school.
I know I've talked a lot about his DC work and that I enjoyed, because I'm more of a DC guy, but I'm also a Spider-Man guy. And in addition to his run on Amazing Spider-Man, which I must admit I've only read maybe half of his issues, apart from the main books, two of my favorite books from both companies were the team-up books. I love Brave and the Bold. And I loved Marvel Team Up, and Len had a really good run on Marvel Team Up, which was perfect for him because it's a different character every issue, and he just has fun with them. And you can trust him with those characters that he's not going to do something, you know, disgraceful or because I don't know how much research of a researcher he was, but I know that every time you read those characters, I mean, a lot of times this is, you're being introduced to these characters through these team up books. And Len did a good job in introducing me to a lot of characters in the Marvel universe that I never would have encountered without that team up book.
Yeah. He did a bunch of issues of DC Comics Presents also, which was the Superman team up
book. Yes.
of the 80s. And he also did one of the ultimate team-up books of the 80s, the Batman-Hulk DC Marvel crossover story. That was Len also in 81.
Yes, he did. With the Joker and was it, who was the bad guy in that one for Marvel?
Yeah, I can't remember.
That's how memorable it was.
Ouch.
Oh, that was an event, though. Those early DC Marvel crossovers. That was crazy. Mm-hmm. We could go on and on, obviously.
Yes. Yeah. We
Blue Beetle also. I wanted to mention Blue Beetle was a favorite of mine when DC's post-crisis started bringing back, you know, the Question and all those Charlton characters, and he had a nice run on Blue Beetle with Paris Collins.
Mm-hmm. And that's the Ted Kord Blue Beetle, folks.
Yes. Yes.
Not the Jaime. No. But it's awesome because he did so much fun stuff and his stories were entertaining and everything. And that was great about it.
He actually appeared in, he does appear as a cameo in X-Men Days of Future Past.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
One of the senators, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yes.
Yep. Yep. So if you look real sharp, you can see him.
Mm-hmm. And he was also, I don't remember now which artist designed it, but when they did Cain and Abel as the horror hosts of DC in the 70s, Cain, his look was based on Len Wein.
I could see that.
Wow, that's kind of funny. I didn't know that. That makes sense, though. That's when Len was looking a little bulkier. Well, and you know, the other thing too is that, like I said, I never got a chance to meet him, but I've seen many pictures of him, many interviews with him, always smiling, always, seems like he was a good-natured soul. I don't think I've heard.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't think of anybody who said anything bad about him.
Yeah, I also got to meet him once very briefly a long time ago, like late 90s, I guess. I met him in San Diego. And super briefly, and he was a hard guy to track down. Like I had a Swamp Thing collection with me that I'd been having a bunch of people sign. So I've got the Swamp Thing trade that's signed by Steve Bissett and John Tottleman and Wrightson and Rick Veitch and a bunch of artists. And I was trying to catch Len to get him to sign it, and I could never find him. Like he was never signing anywhere. So I just happened to, I ran up to him at the end of a panel he was on, said hello really quick. And even then I didn't get a chance to have him sign the book, but just had a quick, hey, nice to meet you. Hello. Kind of a quick meeting with him just that one time. I would recommend if you go to Mark Evanier's website, newsfromme.com, Mark knew Len for, 40 something years. I think they were friends and coworkers at Marvel and DC over the years. But, Mark has shared a bunch of great anecdotes about Len over the last month and just kept stressing how all his memories of Len involve laughter, how Len was just always laughing, joking around. And especially when you think that Len, there were a lot of hardships in Len Wein's life, and he had a lot of health issues over the decades. You know, he was in very poor health on and off going way back to the 70s. And he had some heart. I mean, his house burned down. He lost all his possessions just a few years back.
He even lost his dog.
Lost his dog. Mark Evanier arranged to try to restore Len's comic book collection at that time. He had people just sending in, contributing comics that Len had worked at to restore Len's collection. I think I donated a couple of comics at that time as well. So this was a guy that really had some rough times through his life, and was just always laughing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's hard to find someone in comics that's contributed more than Len Wein over the years. It's just staggering what he's contributed. And
no,
I mean, you
very
know,
true.
I don't think anybody at the time realized how huge Wolverine was going to become, that he would overtake Spider-Man in popularity, overtake the Avengers in popularity, and that was Len Wein. I mean, it was an issue of Hulk. There he was.
Well, it was funny because Wolverine was just, a one-time character, basically. They didn't originally plan on him coming back. Oh, a Canadian superhero who has, you know, knives coming out of his gloves. And, you know,
how do you get that past the censors? And I mean, really, he has knives coming out of his gloves. Okay, cool. Put that in the comics. Yeah.
That's the best part about it. It's just like, you think about it and it's just like, how the heck did they do that? But then if you think about it, at the same time, they had, you know, the Kung Fu comics with the guys with knife hands and everything. So Wolverine was tame in comparison, you know?
Well, before he was really developed.
Did Wolverine appear anywhere between his first appearance and the Giant Size X-Men, or was that his second?
Giant Size X-Men was the second appearance.
Wow.
Wow. So it was Len Wein saying, hey, I'm using this guy again. You're going to have him in this X-Men book that no one's going to buy, and all of a sudden it set the industry on fire.
Well, the great thing about it is, you know, nobody even knew what Wolverine looked like under his mask or what his real powers were. They just thought he was a guy who had, you know, the claws, but that was it. And it was Chris Claremont, I think, 3 issues after New X-Men started. That's the first time they showed what Wolverine looked like without his mask on, and that they showed, you know, hey, his claws were coming out of the back of his hand. Yeah. And it was funny because in that issue, Banshee saw the claws come out. He says, I thought they were part of your glove. He said, nope, they're part of me, bub. So it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's one of those it's one of those weird things that, that Wolverine's first appearance is actually not even in an X-Men book. It's in a Hulk book.
How long was his run on Hulk? I mean, obviously the first appearance was Hulk, wasn't it? How long of a run did he have on Hulk?
That's a good question. I do not know the answer to that.
It was about 20 something issues.
Not bad though.
Yeah.
No, because, you know, he also introduced Wendigo in the same Wolverine story. And, you know, Wendigo pops up quite a bit in Marvel. Between X-Men later and also Alpha Flight and other titles, including Hulk later on.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Not to harp on it, but I was just thinking about it when you're talking about, you know, Wolverine and everything, and how, you know, the big news right now is that Wolverine is coming back, like the quote unquote real Wolverine is coming back into the Marvel universe in the comics. And I'm like, well, I know if I pick up that issue, it's not going to have a little box that says Wolverine created by Len Wein. You know, I know that if I pick up a issue of, you know, Swamp Thing, that that it'll be there. It'll say that, you know, Swamp Thing's created by Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson. And it's sad that we lost both of the creators of Swamp Thing this year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think he passed away. It was like, what, a week after Dragon Con, or not even a week?
Because
mm-hmm. One day of Dragon Con, I had the Bernie Wrightson tribute panel, and it was an amazing panel with remembrances from William Stout and Larry Hama, and, you know, all of a sudden, just less than a week later, mine was just gone.
Nope, definitely.
Yeah, and even though he'd been sick for a while, too, it's one of those things where you're kind of like, really? Like, I mean, he was 69, but I mean, that's not, you know.
That's not old anymore.
Yeah, that's not really, like, I'm just like, that's.
That's closer to you than you think.
Well, yeah, that's true. As I get closer, I'm going, that's not old at all. Every year I'm like, that's not old. Nope. 80? No, that's not old at all.
Nope.
But,
no, definitely understand that. Wow, we've been talking about Len for almost 45 minutes already, and I think we've just barely scratched the surface. And that's the great thing with this guy. You know, folks, if you ever get a chance to read his stuff, you know, please do. You know, let's go around real quick. If you wanted to, like, met somebody who's never read a Len Wein comic or a storyline or something like that, what would you recommend? Let's start with Kevin.
All right. You know, I'm going to pick something that we have not mentioned at all yet, just to mix it up. And again, as a DC guy, a pretty recent project of Len's. This is from just 6-7 years ago. He did a series called DC Universe Legacies, and it was a 10-part series. It's collected. You can get it as a trade paperback now. But this was like a long-form story, and it covers kind of the whole history of DC, like from the Golden Age up through the present, and it's sort of following a couple of characters who are just encountering the evolution of the DC universe. So from each issue, you know, it starts back Golden Age, Justice Society, through all the weird stuff that happened in the 50s and into the Bronze Age, and Death of Superman, right up into the Modern Age. It kind of hits all the major points to tell the whole history of DC, but as one big personal story from one perspective. So really nicely done. And so that would be my recommendation, DC Universe Legacies.
That's awesome. Tony, what about you?
Len did keep busy even in later years. I recall an Elseworlds story. I'm trying to remember the title. I know there was a Batman Elseworlds that was drawn by Guy Davis, with incredible covers by Bernie, and it's a really awesome miniseries. I wish I could recall the title off the top of my head. But he's, I think it's more than just that for Elseworlds, though. He wrote an annual, I think, with Bernie Wrights, and two, like a Superman, Batman, like composite, I recall, later on. But I would say if you haven't seen anything of Len Wein's, I would recommend, of course, read Giant Size X-Men, because you're going to be blown away by the fact that there are characters in there you're going to find one of your favorite X-Men characters and realize this guy created one of them or more of them than you ever realized.
Oh, very much so. What about you, Mikey?
Untold Legend of the Batman. It can't go wrong. It's so solid. And you know, if you're a Bat fan, you'll dig it. And, it's just, yeah, it's like I said, it's the one thing that I was like, after I read it, while I was reading it, I remember who wrote this. And that's where I really started paying attention to him.
Oh no, totally understand that. There's just, like I keep on saying, there's just so much that he did. And, you know, I just, for me, I don't know. I loved his Batman stuff and that he was doing that we were talking about earlier. And, you know, that was, for me, it was great stuff. But I'm going to have to go probably with his Marvel team up that he did. You know, I loved that he was, you know, that he did all those stories that, you know, Spider-Man lives in Manhattan. All these other superheroes live there too. So it was only a matter of time before most of them met up with each other. And that's what I loved about the Marvel Universe, because they all were in that central area and they actually knew each other, and some of them didn't like each other, and, you know, stuff like that. And people were hunting Spider-Man and, you know, stories like that. It was just great stuff. And seeing Spider-Man team up, you know, one issue he's with Iron Man, next he's with Captain America, and next he's with Human Torch, and, you know, all the way through the list. And it was just great, great stuff. And, you know, I enjoyed it and everything. And, you know, I think it's a great way to pick up his writing, and then can't miss out with Giant Size X-Men number one. It's a great story.
I couldn't remember the title before. I just looked up the title of that Elseworlds book. It's Batman Nevermore. So it's Batman meeting Edgar Allan Poe. I mean,
I remember that. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to cheat and go again as well. If you put a short list of mandatory Len Wein reading, we have to include Swamp Thing also. That's true. House of Secrets, the first appearance, plus that first 10 issues with Wrights and Wein together, and it's been collected multiple times. That's essential reading.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But we want to hear from you guys at home. What are your memories of Len Wein comics? You know, we have a favorite that we didn't even touch on? We definitely want to hear from you. ESOpodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Con Report.
This week on Myopia Defend Your Childhood. Myopia Defend Your Childhood is so named because I believe we are short-sighted on the things we watched as kids. So every week we watch a movie that one of the panelists grew up watching and see if they hold up, from comedy to cartoons or to action. And for this season, the last Thursday of each month, we're doing a TV show in our Myopia Morning segments. We watch Saturday morning cartoons and afternoon classics. So find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. How will you stand when we put your past on trial? Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Well, last weekend we had the pleasure and the honor of going and attending the fourth annual Monsterama convention right here in Atlanta. Actually, it was in Alpharetta this year, but it's still close enough. And man, what a great weekend it was. Had a great time. Everybody there was so nice. The vibe of that show is really good. It's just a lot of people who are passionate about classic monsters and everything that kind of goes along with that. Very small, intimate show. Has some great guests that were so accessible and nice. Some screenings. They had the spook show that Professor Morte puts on. That's always a big highlight. Got to see some friends of the station and hang out. And some people came by and purchased the ESO anthology, which I was really happy about. Pleased to see. I'm always thankful and grateful for anybody who purchases our books. That's a great honor in and of itself. I was there on Saturday and Sunday, and so I got to hang out with a lot of folks. And Mike, you were there on Sunday. Your impressions of this year?
I had a great time. It was, you know, neat to see the growth of this con, because I've been going since its first year, and it's neat to see how many more people have come, how much more programming has grown. The guests were amazing this year. I've always wanted to meet Sybil Danning, and it's like, I got to meet Sybil Danning. I talked to her. It was awesome. You know, she was one of my crushes back in the 80s. I didn't want to tell her that, but it was neat to see. And she was just awesome, you know. And, you know, some of the other folks we met there, it was just great to see a lot of friends of the show. And, you know, Anthony knocked himself out by putting this thing together. I really had a great time.
It's great fun. Special shout out to Rebecca Perry, who not only just was a great person to have hang around with and chat with, but she also was the DJ for the Monster Prom on Saturday night, and she did an excellent job. There was just, like I said, a good vibe. We saw, you know, artist Peter Cutler was there, a good friend of the station, Mark Heffernan, stopped by. Like, if I try to name everybody, I'm going to leave some people out. Because there was a lot of people there and that we ran into. Some people that we got to see at Dragon Con, and some people that I missed seeing at Dragon Con that I got to catch up with at this show. So that was great. But yeah, you're right. Anthony puts on a great job. Suzanne, who's also a co-chair of Monsterama. Suzanne, I can't pronounce her last name. I always mess it up. It's N-A-J-B-R-T.
Naturbit?
Sure, we'll go with that.
We'll go with that one.
We'll say Anthony and Suzanne do a great job. The rest of the staff is very friendly and very informative. They help. They really do to try to help you out and come by every once in a while when you're at the table to see, make sure everything's good, that you're okay. I saw Francesco Francavilla. He was a guest there, chatted with him a bit. So that was always fun. Hanging out with him, as well as my new friend. I can call him my new friend since Dragon Con, Dacre Stoker, who I saw he had a panel, and I put panel in quotes. He had a panel on called Stoker on Stoker, where he talked about his great-great-uncle, Bram Stoker, and some of the influences on the book Dracula, which we're going to review in a few weeks. But he provided a lot of insight, and believe me, it was a very, very informative, very well-researched panel. I mean, I really felt like I was I had taken a class. I thought I should be taking notes at some point. I'm like, is there going to be a test after this? It was just a big info dump, but it was very entertaining. And like I said, very relevant and informative. I really appreciated his panel. So that was fun. The Atlanta Radio Company Theater, Radio Theater Company, the theater company, right? They performed on Sunday. Amidst all the fun that we had, I do have to make an apology to some people at the convention as well as our listeners. We had been promoting, and it was even in the schedule, that we were going to be recording a podcast to air later on, where we would spotlight Edgar Allan Poe. And unfortunately, due to the lateness of the panel and the fact that it's Sunday at a convention, some of the panelists had already left to go home for the weekend, and the turnout was not conducive to recording. We were right next to the screening room, which was pretty loud, so we would not have been able to use any of the audio if we had recorded it, and it just was unfortunate. So there was to those a few people who did show up and we had to cancel, I do apologize to them. I hope they're listening to this, and if they are, howdy. Thanks for listening, and we will have an episode that we are devoting to Edgar Allan Poe later this month, and we will have a few guests on there that'll make it definitely worth listening to. So it won't be a live recording from Monsterama, so I do apologize. So, but we've already talked to Anthony and Suzanne about scheduling next year. So ESO is committed to being part of Monsterama. We love this convention. I think it's a really great show. And I think it's, you know, I can't wait to have it celebrates its fifth year. Hopefully it gets a little bit bigger, I think, every year. The new location in Alpharetta, the hotel is wonderful. It's a great space. It's a little bit further for people to go, I think. But I don't think it's that much further.
Well, it's the boonies, as they say, you know, or the sticks.
Yeah, but it didn't, you know, it makes it feel more intimate, I think. You know, you're out of the city, so it's a little bit more relaxed. And I don't know. I hope more people check it out and are not scared just because it's another 5-10 miles away. Now, I know in Atlanta that means it's another, you know, 40 minutes. But I do hope some more people show up. And we're going to do everything we can to promote it next year so that people do show up. So. But thanks, everybody, for helping make our Monsterama time very, very memorable and fun and entertaining. And I can't wait to do it again next year.
You have it right there from the horse's mouth, folks.
Well, geez, you're going to call me that. You're going to call me names. I don't know. Maybe I should go on with the rest of the year.
Okay, Wilbur.
Well, there's not a lot of conventions that we're going to be at the rest of the year, but I do want to point out that this Sunday we will be at the Atlanta Comic Convention, one day show at the Marriott Century Center. Mike and I will be there. We will be there for a limited time. We don't have a table or anything, so Mike will be there probably just as much time as it is to check out the Funko Pop figures and then leave. So,
well, duh.
So if you want to make sure you see Mike Faber, hang out near the Funko figures and he'll probably, you know, be a blur at some point throughout the day. At some point you'll see him and then some Funko figures will disappear and then, you know, he'll be gone.
Either that or I'll send my entourage in to do it.
I will probably be there a little bit longer. Who knows? I'm just gonna go and hang out. At this point, you know, it's still post Dragon Con, so every convention is more of a casual con that's not as stressed out about. But certainly if you are thinking about attending Atlanta Comic Con this weekend and you want to reach out to us, you want to meet us up and say howdy or even do lunch or something, please reach out to us. Let us know you're going to be there and we'll hook up and say howdy. That's this Sunday, October 8th. Now, I don't have anything else planned except that I do know that like I said, a lot of the local comic shops will be doing a Halloween type event. So I'm looking to see about appearing at a couple of local comic shops. So I'll keep you posted on that as it develops. And then we've got November. The only event that I'm attending in November is November 18th and 19th is Heroes and Villains at Atlanta, Georgia. I will not be, I will not have a table there, but we'll be going there as members of the press, media, and hanging out, saying hi to the guests, as well as getting some interviews and just talking to various people. So if you're going to Heroes and Villains, let us know, and we can hook up and say howdy there too. And speaking of saying howdy at places, if you're in Chicago, November 24th through the 26th, and you're a Doctor Who fan, you owe it to yourself to go to Chicago TARDIS. Unfortunately, Mike and I will not be able to attend that show, but fellow ESO Network host Nathan Laws of the 42 cast, he will be in attendance, and he will be glad to say howdy to you, and as well as Alon Z. Is that right? Did I pronounce that right? Is that,
sure. That's my, of yeah, course.
Right. Sure, of course. What? Anyway, if I didn't pronounce it right, it's just another drink that people are, you know, that is continuing on with the show. So Chicago TARDIS is a great, great Doctor Who event. So I encourage anybody out there to check it out. They've got a great guest list this year. So so check that out at chicagotardis.com for more information. And all the shows that we're talking about will be in our show notes so that you can click on the links and check out more details. And if you have a convention that you want to rant or rave about, that you want to help promote, or if you want us to participate, and look at, we're looking at 2018 already. I'm starting to get my schedule for 2018. I've already said yes to a few shows. I know that Mike has already talked to a few promoters about some shows that ESO is going to have a presence at. And they've already announced the dates. Anthony announced the dates for Monsterama next year, and that is going to be October 5th through the 7th at the Atlanta Marriott Alpharetta. And there's going to be, in addition to that, they're also putting on a new convention. It's brand new to the Atlanta area. It'll make its debut March 30th through April 1st. It's not an April Fool's joke. March 30th through April 1st, 2018 at the same hotel, Atlanta Marriott Alpharetta. But this convention is spy oriented. It's called SpyCon, and it'll be spy themed, all things secret agent and spy oriented. So look for some major announcements on that. They'll be promoting that as soon as the two of them cool off the stress from the Monsterama weekend. I think they are promising to get some announcements and some publicity out for SpyCon. So look for that. But yeah, we will be more than happy to participate in conventions next year. Like I said, we're already working on our schedule. So if you've got a convention that you're going to put on, then let us know. And we will definitely put it on the air because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Let's, of course, start with our guests. Kevin, thank you so much, sir.
My pleasure always, guys. It's always great to be up here on the ESO station, and especially to talk classic comics anytime. Happy to do it.
Oh, very much so. Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Well, I guess I should plug my little corner of the ESO network, right? That would be the Flopcast. And you can find me and Cornflake hosting the Flopcast every single week. And it's a very silly, goofy show. And man, we've been doing this for 5.5 years now. I think episode 283 is coming out this week. And because we're in the 280s, we are celebrating the 80s, as we do all the time, because we're obsessed with the 80s. But for the next, these 10 episodes, we're especially concentrating on a lot of really goofy 80s stuff.
Oh, exactly. Every time I see you that you're at a concert, it's another 80s band. How about that?
I have been to more than one Men Without Hats concert. That is correct.
You guys are doing great.
You guys are doing great work over there. And actually, we were just talking to someone this past weekend about how we really appreciate how consistent you guys are. Just every week, it's just you guys are insane. I should know because we do ours every week, rain or shine, and it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. You know, you guys are just like constantly. Another episode. They're at another con. Oh, it's National Whatever Day. Oh, great. Yeah.
Yeah, we're keeping busy, but it's goofy fun. So why not?
Exactly. Absolutely. That is awesome. And thank you once again for just everything you guys do with the station. I do appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And Tony, you made it through another episode with us.
Thank you for having me. It's great to join you.
Anything you want to you want to promote or shout out about?
Well, DragonCon 2017 is over. Hope you guys came out and enjoyed our comic book panels. I mean, it was a huge undertaking this year, but there was so much to be seen, and I tried to catch as many of the panels as I humanly could, and I absorbed so much comic book knowledge. So now I'm taking a little break until 2018. Planning starts, but it's going to be great.
That is awesome. Have you already been playing with ideas for panels and such, or do you just wait till after the first of the year?
Well, this is the first year as director. I mean, I've been in the planning stages of it. I haven't really been in charge until this past year. I mean, I like the fact that we had nighttime panels, and I kind of, you know, there's so much to do at Dragon Con. I mean, you know, the turnout could have been better, but it's still a good-sized crowd for the time of the panels. You know, I mean, I had a 2.5-hour screening of Superman versus the Elite with Q&A with Joe Kelly, and that I did that was phenomenal. And, you know, I definitely want to do something like that again, where have some options for fans to do something in the evening like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have anything definite yet since there's no guest list, but, you know, just look back at this past year, see what worked, see what gets me excited, and what gets the rest of my moderators excited will probably get all the other fans excited.
It was great. And having participated with the three panels that I was on, I can tell you that it was a blast, and I am already excited. And we'll talk, Tony, because I've got some ideas for some panels next year, so.
Love to have them. Can never have too many great ideas.
Cool. Totally understand that. And Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
I do, and Kevin will appreciate this since he likes the 80s stuff so much. But I recently guested on the White Rocket Entertainment podcast with Van Allen Plexico. And we talked, Van, myself, and Kel Carpenter talked all about the epic event that was Live Aid in July of 1985. We had a lot of fun. We went through, we were both there. We both, not there actually at the shows, but we were both experienced it through our teeny tiny TVs at the time. And it was a really big deal and a big event. And we wanted to, you know, sort of celebrate it. And so we did a pretty good job, and we went through all the bands that performed on both sides of the pond. And it was a lot of fun to talk about.
That's awesome. That's a lot of fun.
I listened to this podcast just today. It was nicely done. That was a great show.
Wow.
Thank you.
Wow. Cross promotions right there. Amazing.
It was my Woodstock, and it was long overdue.
It is double. Woodstock times two.
Yeah, it's true. And I remember watching that on TV live.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe we should do a show on it someday.
Why not? We'll talk about it. Each and every artist that played. Yeah. So, including the Hooters. It'll be awesome.
Absolutely, you include the Hooters in that show.
Oh, of course.
I love not. The Hooters.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you got to talk about the Hooters if you're talking about Live Aid. Come on. Yep. So, my turn. My shout out, folks, please, and I emphasize please, with all the crap going on in the world in these days, you know, please, you know, reach into your pockets. And I said this last week, we talked about Puerto Rico. Things haven't gotten better. Things haven't gone away. And, you know, in some ways things are even worse there this week. You know, please don't forget about it, even though the TV is focusing on other, you know, top stories and other disasters that have happened, including the shooting that we talked about at the beginning of this episode. You know, don't forget about these poor people in Puerto Rico. You know, I was glowing this weekend. We went to Home Depot and we bought like $200 worth of supplies to donate. Some of the Puerto Rican restaurants here in town were rented a cargo plane, and they were doing donations. And we sat in like a mile line to just donate, you know, what we had picked up, and what we had was measly compared to what other people had brought. And it's just, it doesn't matter if it's $5. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, $200, you know, it just give if you can. And, you know, the people of Puerto Rico, they need it. They truly, truly need it. No matter what the media, you know, is saying, or our fearless leader or whatever is bitching about on Twitter, you know, these people are just normal people like you and I. And, you know, we definitely can help. And speaking of helping, I wanted to take a quick break and, you know, talk about our friend Anthony Taylor. He's been on our show many, many times. He's, you know, co-hosted segments. He runs Monsterama, a great monster con down here in Atlanta. And he's been a true friend of the show. It's now time for us to help him out. For those who don't know, the very first day of Monsterama on Friday, Anthony's apartment complex burnt down, literally. And his apartment was ruined. He lost everything in the fire. You know, he was on the ground floor at least. And, you know, I'm saying at least, but the whole apartment above him was destroyed. There was nothing left. And everything in their apartment was ruined. There was nothing they could save. And Anthony had collectibles. He had all his clothes, all his personal belongings. He was lucky enough to be at a hotel for the con and packed, and he had, you know, the only thing left he has is what was in his suitcase. That's how, you know, horrible it is. We will have links to a Kickstarter that friends of his have started up. And, you know, basically, you know, Anthony and Carrie, they need our help. They're too proud to come out and ask for it. So the friend started the Kickstarter for them, and, you know, we will have links up to it. And, you know, like I said about Puerto Rico, $5, $10, whatever you can give will be appreciated. And, you know, it's going to be, like I said, with Puerto Rico, it's going to be a drop in the bucket. These people, their whole lives were destroyed. They have nothing. And, you know, every time, you know, looking around my room and seeing everything here that I have in my office and my studio, it's amazing, and think that this could be gone just like that. You know, it's just amazing to think about. Sorry to rant again about it, but, you know, these are important things. You know, these are people in need, especially someone so close to the show. And, you know, hopefully you guys out there are very generous. I've never ever thought any different from that, but, you know, we definitely, you know, appreciate anything that you guys can do. And, you know, please help. That's the best I can say. Until next week, of course, where I'm going to say we are going to be back again, and we are going to the movies once again. We were there last week. We're going back next week. This time we're looking at Blade Runner 2049. And, you know, the sequel to Blade Runner is very much up in the air for me. I haven't read any spoilers. I have only seen the preview. And I'm very curious to see how this comes about. Can't wait to talk about it. My name is Mike Faber. We will see you again next week on the Air Station One podcast. Peace. And we're done.
How was that?
You've been listening to Air Station One, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.